Support for WAMC comes from Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating all types of foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Green, Orange, Delaware counties, and now in Albany, hvfa.com. First Light, providing high-speed data, internet, co-location, and voice services to businesses over its own fiber optic network and supported by locally based personnel, firstlight.net. Haven Spa in the village of Rhinebeck, offering spa day packages, appointments, and gift certificates for the holidays online, a serene spa retreat, havenrhinebeck.com. This is a WAMC News Update. I'm Brian Shields. House Speaker Paul Ryan is telling Republican lawmakers that it's time to join forces with the new Trump administration. In a letter to his colleagues, Ryan adds, "We need to seize this moment and come together like never before." The Wisconsin Republican tells House Republicans he is seeking their support in his reelection as Speaker. He circulated the letter today as Congress reconvened for a lame duck session following Donald Trump's election as president. House Republicans will hold closed-door leadership elections tomorrow. Ryan is expected to be reelected as the Speaker. Some transition planning documents reveal some of the names being considered to manage energy policy in the new administration. The documents suggest that oil billionaire Harold Hamm, who was a leading supporter of fracking, is among those under consideration to be the new energy secretary. Venture capitalist Robert Grady is listed as a contender to head energy or the interior. The documents also indicate that an early priority will be the repeal of an Obama administration effort to limit carbon pollution from power plants. State lawmakers could soon see their first pay increase in nearly 20 years. A state commission appointed to study the issue will announce its decision tomorrow. Any pay increase suggested by the commission will take effect automatically unless lawmakers vote against it. Lawmakers now make $79,500 a year, but many get additional stipends and leadership bonuses. The base salary has not gone up in nearly 20 years. Any pay raise would not take effect until the start of the next legislative term. Massachusetts remains a solidly blue state, but an analysis of last week's vote by the Boston Globe indicates some portions of the western part of the Bay State are making a slight move over to the red. For instance, the communities of Russell and Chester voted for Donald Trump. Savoy and Irving gave more of their votes to Trump compared to Republican and former Governor Mitt Romney 4 years ago. The Vermont Senate's longest-serving member is seeking a recount after he was defeated in his bid for a 25th term. Washington County Republican Senator William Bill Doyle came in fourth in the race for three seats representing the district that includes Barrie, Montpelier, and surrounding communities. In his petition for a recount, Doyle says the difference between his vote total and the third-place candidate, Francis Brooks, was less than 2%, the legal requirement to seek a recount. Governor Dana Malloy is joining First Lady Michelle Obama and community leaders from across the country at the White House's Veterans Homelessness Summit. Malloy is planning to discuss Connecticut's efforts to eliminate homelessness among veterans during this afternoon's event. A flooded basement has closed Schenectady City Hall for the rest of today. Tonight's city council meeting has been canceled. Stocks are edging mostly lower in midday trading. Technology companies like Apple and Microsoft are taking big hits. That's canceling out some huge gains for banks on Monday, which are rising as bond yields climb to their highest levels since January. Apple fell 2.7%, one of the biggest losses in the Dow. J.P. Morgan Chase rose the most in the Dow, 3.5%. The Dow is up 12 points, 18,860. The S&P down 3, 2160. The NASDAQ down 22, 5,213. The weather forecast, mostly sunny this afternoon. Today's highs in the mid to upper 50s. Clear early tonight, then clouding up in the mid-30s. Cloudy tomorrow, showers likely near 50. Partly to mostly sunny Wednesday and Thursday, low to mid-50s. Sunny at Montpelier, 50. Clear at North Adams, 53. Rome, New York, clear 50. Albany partly sunny, it's 56. You're listening to Midday Magazine on WAMC. For some, it was a terrifying ordeal. For others, a nuisance. Saturday afternoon, shopping at one of the country's biggest malls was interrupted by a report of gunfire that is still under investigation. WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas has more on the incident at the Crossgates Mall in Albany County.
Well, when I first found out, it was because I was leaving a movie. You know, we were in the movie theater watching a matinee, came out, and the lobby was filled with people. It seemed a little bit, at first, like there was a lot of people for that lobby, but didn't question it, started walking out, and was quickly stopped by an employee who said, there's been an incident in the mall, and you're being asked to stay here until police say it's safe to leave.
WAMC Morning Edition host David Gastino was caught off guard, like so many others who populated Crossgates Mall Saturday. Word quickly spread across social media, with posts relaying reports of a shooting around 2:30 p.m. near the Apple Store. Employee Adam Gerard tells WAMC workers at the store could hear what sounded like gunshots and immediately went into emergency situation protocols.
We heard at least two loud bangs, and everybody got down and moved to the back, and we evacuated out the back door. And made our way out to the parking lot and, just kind of accounted for everybody here just to see that everybody was safe.
Initial reports indicated gunfire exchanges between two men. There were no reports of injuries. The suspect was described as a 6-foot-tall black man weighing 200 pounds. There was a heavy police presence. At least 16 regional law enforcement agencies turned out to assist. Back on the other side of the huge mall, Gastina and other moviegoers were herded back into the theater, where they were briefed by officials before being directed to leave the building about an hour later.
Two National Guard troops came right into the movie theater, armed, dressed in full gear. They said, listen, folks, we're here to get you out of the building now. Please, in orderly fashion, follow us, move along. And please disperse to your cars. The exits are open for you to leave.
Other mall patrons weren't as fortunate, ordered to shelter in place, confined to whatever store they happened to be in, spending long hours waiting for an all clear, eventually allowed to leave in shifts.
As we left the movie theater, on either side of us, in a complete line like a barricade, creating a corridor, were armed personnel from local police, sheriffs, National Guard troops, all lining each side, creating a corridor for us to leave the mall exit where you enter for Crossgates 18 theaters. There were helicopters circling over, police cars parked all entrances to the mall, blocking entrance to the mall. A pretty amazing situation, and knowing as we do, Dave, from our news reporting here at WAMC, was certainly aware that the county was doing these kinds of shooter drills. And it appeared to me, having seen what was done, at least in our case, that it was handled by the numbers. And boy, did I think at the end, I could hear a number of people thanking the personnel, including myself, as we were leaving.
Gilderland Police Chief Carol Lawler told reporters Sunday there was no reason to believe the public is in danger, and that it was now apparent a single shot was fired. The mall opened as usual on Sunday. Lawler asked people to remain vigilant, requesting anyone with photos or video of the incident to contact authorities. On a Sunday morning back in June, a multi-agency emergency response drill was held at Crossgates so local law enforcement agencies could practice preparedness and communication. When reporters asked if police would release a screenshot of the suspect, Lawler promised she would look into it, but as of Monday morning, no picture had been released. Lawler would not comment on whether the shooting might be gang-related and would not say whether police had found any bullet or shell casing at the scene. Meanwhile, police and mall officials have been reassuring citizens it is safe to shop at Crossgates Mall. They characterize what happened Saturday an isolated incident. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
In the wake of a scandal over alleged misconduct, the City Council in Springfield, Massachusetts is ready to vote tonight to put a board of civilians in charge of all police department personnel decisions. The move is strongly opposed by the city's mayor. Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill reports.
Springfield City Council President Mike Fenton said the proposed board of police commissioners would have the power to hire, fire, and discipline police officers. Those duties are currently handled by a police commissioner who is appointed by the mayor and is sometimes advised by a civilian board that can investigate complaints against police officers. Fenton said a police commission will bring transparency and fairness to police oversight.
And we believe that with enacting this legislation, it will restore and preserve the good name of the Springfield Police Department.
The police department has been tarnished by revelations that a detective threatened to kill and plant drug evidence on two teenagers during an interrogation earlier this year that was video recorded. Police Commissioner John Barbieri has been sharply criticized for not firing the detective. Also, a federal judge in a ruling on a motion in a police brutality lawsuit said there appeared to be a consistent pattern of rejecting civilian complaints against Springfield police officers. A dozen police officers are reportedly under investigation for their roles in a fight outside a bar in April 2015.
Recent events have exposed the failures and shortcomings of this system that we have known of for the better part of the last decade. So we're confident that a lot of those issues will be addressed by a police commission.
Fenton said the council will take an initial vote Monday on the ordinance to establish the police commission. He said 10 councilors, a so-called supermajority, have co-sponsored the ordinance, making it impervious to a mayoral veto.
This is legislation that we have been working on for the better part of the last decade. We're very proud to bring it here today. This is not a vote of no confidence in Commissioner Barbieri. This is about creating a better system.
Fenton said the police commission may not take effect until 2019, when Barbieri's current 5-year employment contract with the city expires. Under the proposed ordinance, a police chief hired under civil service regulations would be in charge of day-to-day management decisions. Mayor Dominic Sarno said the council's proposal for a 5-member board of police commissioners would inject politics and patronage into the police department. Sarno said a modern urban police department should be run by a law enforcement professional.
You have a commissioner who's in command, and you have a civilian review board. Only thing they have at stake is to make sure that our officers are doing the right thing to protect our public.
A police commission oversaw the city's police department until about a decade ago, when it was disbanded by the state-appointed control board that was in charge of the city's government at the time. State Representative Jose Tosado, who served on that earlier police commission, said it is not a perfect system, but believes it is better than what is in place now.
It provides accountability, it provides transparency, but more than that, it allows the citizens who get police to have an input in terms of the policies and procedures and some oversight and monitoring of the Springfield Police Department.
Henry Thomas, president of the Urban League of Springfield, also endorsed a return to a civilian police commission, saying it would assure equitable treatment.
And equitable treatment means not intimidating, not brutalizing or doing anything that would be done under the color of law. And I think that if we have a transparent system and we have a commission that has teeth, then it will contain that kind of behavior and weed it out when it does happen.
Members of the proposed police commission would be appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the city council. Reporting from Springfield, this is Paul Tuthill at WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau on the campus of Western New England University.
While New York would not be as greatly affected as some other states if the Affordable Care Act is repealed, there could be some changes to the health exchange. As WRVO's Tom Magnarelli reports, Republicans in control of the House, Senate, and soon the presidency are now positioned to repeal President Obama's health care law.
New York's State of Health is a marketplace for buying health insurance. It operates under the Affordable Care Act, but is a self-sustaining program, meaning the state pays for it so it can run on its own. And it chips in for a part of the subsidies to help eligible customers buy insurance. A repeal of the Affordable Care Act would affect the remaining costs of those subsidies paid for by the federal government.
The big question out there is, how do we make up that federal deficit from what is being put in by the federal government? How does the state make that up? And we don't have that answer.
Brian Van Benskoden, an insurance programs coordinator with ACR Health, says it would fall on Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state legislature to decide. Van Benskoden says other items they would lobby the state to include from the Affordable Care Act are the pre-existing condition clause, caps on benefits, and dependent coverage up to age 26.
These are all big things that have changed the landscape of health insurance in the United States and in New York, that we will maintain a fervor to keep in effect.
There are also provisions some Republicans think should remain law even if the Affordable Care Act is repealed. Regardless of what happens in the future, ACR Health encourages the uninsured to get covered now during the Affordable Care Act's open enrollment.
That report by WRVO's Tom Magnarelli. O'clock today on WAMC. It's Radio Lab. It begins at 1. Today at 2 on Vox Pop, it's Medical Monday. Dr. John Horan is the guest. Blood and marrow disease, anemia, and pediatric oncology is the focus today. 2 o'clock, Medical Monday on Vox Pop. The Connecticut Police Chiefs Association hopes an interactive presentation aimed at new drivers will make routine traffic stops go a lot smoother for both the driver and law enforcement. But members of Connecticut's Racial Profiling Prohibition Advisory Board object to one component of the presentation. WNPR's Ray Hardman reports.
It's called Breaking Barriers, a 30-minute program designed to promote positive interactions during a traffic stop. Reading Police Chief Douglas Fuchs.
The intent is to have a better understanding of the mechanics of a traffic stop, to have a better understanding from the operator's standpoint, to understand that the police officer, when they're walking up to the car, has absolutely no idea who you are.
Through slides and videos, a local police officer will instruct new drivers on what to expect when you're pulled over. But what comes next is more controversial. Three videos intended to show new drivers what police officers have to deal with day in and day out, including a video by Washington Post reporter Jason Capehart. Capehart, who is black, offers his take on the Department of Justice's investigation of the killing of Michael Brown by Ferguson, Missouri police officer Darren Wilson.
They also forced me to deal with two uncomfortable truths. Brown never surrendered with his hands up. And Wilson was justified in shooting Brown.
Several members of Connecticut's Racial Profiling Prohibition Advisory Board found the videos unacceptable, including Sabira Gordon, executive director of the state's Commission on Equality and Opportunity.
I really, like, as a parent, would be very upset if someone's telling them the hands up, don't shoot mantra is based on a lie. Like, that's not a conversation I'm okay with a stranger having with my child.
Fuchs assured the panel breaking barriers is a work in progress. The Connecticut Police Chiefs Association hopes to eventually offer the program free of charge to anyone who takes driver's education classes in Connecticut. For WAMC, I'm Ray Hardman.
Support for WAMC comes from the Troy Chromatic Concerts, presenting Mozart, Orchestra of Salzburg with conductor Matthew Halls and horn soloist Radovan Vlatkovic. Thursday, December the 1st, 7:30 p.m. at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, troychromatics.com. Simmons Recovery Consulting, advocating for public entities that are grant recipients of a FEMA disaster, specializing in financial strategy development and grants management, simmonsrecoveryconsulting.com. Berkshire Natural Resources Council, putting conservation and community together with 200 miles of trails to towns, berkshirehighroad.org for more information. The time is 25 minutes after 12 o'clock, Midday Magazine on WAMC. Meteorologist Paul Caiano with the Midday Weather Summary.
Good afternoon. High pressure is dominating the weather picture across New York and New England today, and after a chilly start with many locations back into the 20s, we're in the middle of a fast rebound with full sunshine. Temperatures are soaring back through the 30s and 40s, and eventually we'll settle into the middle and upper 50s for afternoon highs. That high pressure will eventually give way as a disturbance tracks up the eastern seaboard. Not a particularly strong storm, but clear skies this evening will eventually give way to increasing clouds as lows drop back into the 30s again tonight. Tomorrow, as that disturbance tracks east of New Jersey and south and east of Long Island, it'll push thicker clouds and eventually some showers in. First, coastal sections will get wet early tomorrow morning. Then the rest of interior New York and New England will have the chance for off and on showers during the day. The best chance of a steadier rain will be from the Hudson River Valley points east into New England, while northbound, closer to the Canadian border, and west towards central New York, just a few scattered showers are likely by late morning and into the early part of the afternoon. With all the clouds and scattered showers, temperatures will be held back into the upper 40s and lower 50s. Still plenty of clouds around on Wednesday, though dry weather. This will keep it in the lower 50s before a ridge of high pressure builds in both at the surface and aloft for later in the week, and this will allow for a pretty good warm-up for this time of year. With mostly sunny skies on Thursday, we'll be in the lower to mid-50s, and on Friday mostly sunny with highs in the upper 50s to around 60. Clouds will start to move in late in the day on Saturday, but not before temperatures get well into the 50s with dry weather once again, and this eventually will lead to some rain and perhaps even snow showers to round out the weekend. Taking a look at potentially significant weather today, that low pressure system along the southeast coast will move northward along the coast today. The system will bring rain to portions of the Carolinas and the mid-Atlantic region and possibly even a few thunderstorms. Farther west, a front will move inland in the Pacific Northwest, bringing rain and high elevation snow. Another low will move onshore in the Northwest tomorrow, bringing another round of rain and high elevation snow. This second system will be associated with a deepening upper level trough, which will gradually lower snow levels across the west as it moves inland. Meanwhile, southwesterly winds over the Rocky Mountain front in Montana will gust up to 80 miles per hour today. High wind warnings have been issued. And expanding high pressure aloft will keep warm and generally dry conditions in place across much of the central U.S. through the middle of the week. Afternoon high temperatures are expected to be 15 to 25 degrees above average today and tomorrow from the central and northern plains to the upper Midwest. The past 24 hours, lower 48 states' temperature extremes ran from a high of 93 degrees at San Diego, California, to a low of 15 at Alamosa and Waverly, both in Colorado. For those traveling across the Northeast today, New York City sunny near 60, Boston mostly sunny in the mid-60s, and in Buffalo mostly sunny and breezy with highs in the mid-50s. The average high temperature in Albany today, 49 degrees, the average low, 32. The record high 70 set in 1973, and the record low 12 in 1986. Sunrise this morning was at 6:46 a.m. Sunset this evening, 4:33 p.m., 9 hours and 47 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 minutes from yesterday. Here are my latest regional forecasts for the Northern Adirondacks and central and northern Vermont, as well as the Champlain Valley and Lake George area. Sunny and mild today, with highs reaching the mid-50s. Clear this evening, then increasing clouds late tonight, with lows in the upper 20s and lower 30s. For the Connecticut Valley and mid and lower Hudson Valley, as well as for the remainder of interior southern New England, sunny and mild today with highs in the upper 50s and lower 60s. Clear this evening, then increasing clouds late tonight with a chance of a shower towards sunrise, lows near 40. For the northern Catskills and Mohawk Valley west of Amsterdam, as well as for the southern Adirondacks, sunny and mild today with highs in the mid to upper 50s. Clear this evening and increasing clouds overnight tonight with lows in the lower to mid-30s. For the southern Catskills, Taconics, and southern Berkshires, as well as for the Litchfield Hills, sunny and mild today with highs in the mid to upper 50s. Clear this evening and increasing clouds overnight tonight with lows in the middle to upper 30s. For the Greater Capital District, including Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, as well as for the Saratoga area, east into southern Vermont and the Berkshires, north of I-90. Sunny and mild today with highs in the mid to upper 50s. Clear this evening and increasing clouds overnight tonight with lows in the mid to upper 30s. Region-wide for tomorrow, cloudy with showers likely, highs close to 50. Mostly cloudy, lower 50s Wednesday. Mostly sunny on Thursday and Friday, mid-50s Thursday, upper 50s Friday, sunshine giving way to clouds on Saturday, still in the mid to upper 50s, and mostly cloudy with some rain, perhaps some snow showers on Sunday with high temperatures back into the 40s. For WAMC, I'm News Channel 13 meteorologist Paul Kiano.
Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire Natural Resources Council. Together with 200 miles of trails to towns, berkshirehighroad.org for more information. Emma Willard School, a boarding and day high school for girls working to foster their intellect, character, and moral strength in an effort to serve and shape the world. EmmaWillard.org. Beacon Music Factory, a music school for everyone with rock band boot camps, private lessons, and group classes like mastering, vocal, harmony, and songwriting. BeaconMusicFactory.com for enrollment. Tischler and Patch Dental Woodstock, offering sleep apnea solutions with home sleep testing and oral appliance therapy. As an alternative to CPAP treatment, TischlerDental.com.
Coming up on this week's book show, Mbolo Mbeye's debut novel is Behold the Dreamers. It chronicles a young Cameroonian couple making a new life in New York just as the Great Recession of the 2000s upends the economy. The novel explores marriage, immigration, class, race, and the trapdoors in the American dream. Mbolo Mbeye on this week's book show. Tuesday afternoons at 3, Thursday evenings at 8:30, and anytime via podcast or at WAMC.org.
This is a WAMC News Update. I'm Brian Shields. The nation's Roman Catholic bishops are urging President-elect Trump to adopt humane policies toward immigrants and refugees. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops said part of their identity as Roman Catholics is serving and welcoming people fleeing conflict and violence. Trump talked tough on immigration on the campaign trail, including building a wall along the border of the U.S. and Mexico and deporting the estimated 11 million people in the country illegally. In an interview with 60 Minutes last night, Trump said he would focus on deporting people with criminal records beyond their immigration status. Trump also called for suspending the admission of Syrian refugees. A federal judge in Minnesota this week will sentence 9 men who were convicted of plotting to join the Islamic State group in Syria. The men are to be sentenced in groups of 3 today through Wednesday. Prosecutors are seeking just a few years for defendants who cooperated with them and as many as 40 years for those who did not. The University of Massachusetts Amherst has raised $379 million in the largest capital campaign in state public higher education history, easily surpassing the $300 million goal. The state's flagship campus announced Monday that more than 103,000 donors contributed to the UMass Rising campaign, which brought in the 5 largest gifts in university history. The money will go to the endowment, academic and research programs, scholarships, and infrastructure. Organizers say a New York music festival founded by the late Pete Seeger will resume next year. Clearwater's Great Hudson River Revival will return to the village of Croton-on-Hudson on June 17th and 18th of next year. The Beacon, New York-based environmental group Hudson River Sloop Clearwater canceled this year's festival because of financial issues. A flooded basement has closed Schenectady City Hall today, the water 8 feet high in the lowest level of the building. Tonight's city council meeting has been canceled as a result. Support for WAMC comes from Homebrew Emporium, New Rochelle in North Greenbush, New York, West Boylston in Boston, Massachusetts, providing beer and wine-making equipment and supplies for beginners to professionals, beerbrew.com. With the results of last week's election still reverberating across the political landscape, President-elect Donald Trump has started putting together his administration. In January, the Republicans will control the White House and both houses of Congress. The party has also expanded its control in state houses across the nation. New York State Republican Party Chairman Ed Cox discusses the results on this week's Capital Connection program with WAMC's Alan Shartok.
This is obviously it was not anticipated by most of the media, most of the pollsters. I think the Business Daily was the only one that polled and only predicted, which has been the most accurate in the past. I felt this would happen despite the polls and all the pundits, simply because I just knew there was a Brexit vote here, I will call it. Mm-hmm. And it happened in Brexit. It was a 5% swing that was completely unexpected. And there's a same vote here that was not being taken into account by the pollsters. And it was precisely in the states, the Brexit vote, which it translated into American terms, I would call it the core of the silent majority under President Nixon, or the Reagan Democrats under Reagan. And this is a portion of our population that has been hurt over the last 15 years in a way that their culture has been disrespected. They feel their jobs have been disrespected. They feel that the companies they work for have been disrespected, or in some cases have just disappeared and the jobs have disappeared. And they feel their country abroad is disrespected due to the Obama administration. And they were ready to turn out in unprecedented numbers, particularly in what is called the Rust Belt, which frankly starts in New Hampshire, runs across upstate New York, across western New York, across western Pennsylvania, across northern Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and into Wisconsin. Indeed, that's where an unprecedented vote showed up to vote for Donald Trump and make him the president of the United States.
Well, you weren't the only one who got it right. You know who else got it right? Me. I got it right.
Congratulations, Alan.
And I have to tell you, not because I was endorsing him, obviously. I wasn't.
Yeah.
But because I saw it the same way you did. I looked at the New York Times, which was saying every day, up to the election, 83% that Hillary would win. And then I would go down to the national polls right underneath it, and it would say Clinton plus one, Clinton plus two. I said, uh-oh, that ain't going to work. And so I made my announcement to the great disdain of everybody. It turned out, from your perspective, fortunately, from mine, unfortunately.
Well, let me take a step back. There's another way of looking at this also, Alan, and that is in the first 5 or 6 months, and this applies to the Trump administration also, but in 8 years ago, in the first 5 or 6 months of the Obama administration, he really set his course with Obamacare as a signature of program, of course. And his attitude to that was stated very precisely to Boehner: we won, you lost, we do it exactly the way we want to do it. The kind of arrogance that killed Hillary Care way back when she developed her health care plan and it failed. But this time, and I would include other programs like Dodd-Frank, which killed off the small banks that lend to small businesses that create jobs, and a stimulus bill that didn't work in the end. The president chuckled, gee, only 6% show already got jobs. If you had worked it right, there would have been a lot more, but that has to do with all these pieces of legislation which weren't well thought out. And the result was, in December of 2009, his first year, Scott Brown wins Ted Kennedy's seat, because Ted Kennedy had passed a special election, and the issue was Obamacare and the other piece of legislation the Obama administration. That was saying to the Obama administration, look, you failed. And he had a chance to redeem himself, but he drove his program right through. Even though he only had 59 votes, he used reconciliation and various devices and executive orders to drive his program through. And he didn't even have his Democrats with him. He was in the Congress. So that worked itself out, where we progressively, we have won more congressional seats, more Senate seats. We want a huge majority in Congress, a nice majority in the Senate. Governorships, we have more than we've ever had now, 33. We have more houses of legislature, 68 of the 99 houses. It was logical that the final step would be for the American public to give us the presidency of the United States and say, okay, let's see what you can do.
That's the chairman of the New York State Republican Party, Ed Cox. He spoke with WAMC's Alan Chartok on this week's Capital Connection program. At 1 o'clock today, Radiolab. Today at 2 on Vox Pop, Medical Monday, Dr. John Horan, blood and marrow disease, anemia, pediatric oncology, just some of the topics today. Today at 2, Vox Pop, Medical Monday on WAMC. Donald Trump supporters believe he will transform America by bringing back manufacturing and tackling illegal immigration. His opponents fear that almost a decade of Democratic policies will be reversed. At the top of the list, Obamacare, President Obama's attempt to guarantee health care regardless of income. The BBC's Matthew Price reports on the future of the Affordable Care Act.
When we win on November 8th, and elect a Republican Congress, we will be able to immediately repeal and replace Obamacare. Have to do it.
That was candidate Trump on the campaign trail. It's hard to understand why his promise to dismantle the key domestic policy reform brought in by Barack Obama was cheered by so many here. Before Obamacare came in, millions of Americans did not have health cover. Now they do. Why would you want to change that? Well, for some, Obamacare came at a cost.
Good afternoon, my name is Dawn. I'll get you a menu. What would you like to drink?
And it came at a cost for my waitress in Bob's Diner, just outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Our daily specials for morning, for breakfast is pumpkin pancakes. And then for lunch, we have an ultimate grilled cheese sandwich with French fries and a Reuben wrap on wheat.
A key part of Obamacare works like this. Everyone in America has to have health insurance. Those who can't afford it get cover paid for by the government. Those who can must take out a policy. If they don't, they get fined, even if they don't have enough money.
I had to make a choice whether I was going to pay my son's tuition or I was going to have health care, and his tuition came first. So we got penalized at the end of the year during taxes, $600, because we did not have health care.
How did that feel, having to make that choice?
It was awful. We were so upset.
Did you vote Democrat in the past?
Yes.
Was Obamacare one of the main factors?
Yes, it was.
Making you vote for Donald Trump?
Yes, it is. It's killing us. So that's why I voted for Trump. I wanted change.
I am CNAD, may I help you?
It's not just the fines that have annoyed some people. Across the road at the Ohio Valley Hospital, I'm meeting Dennis Lucas. He's from the local healthcare council, which represents hospitals.
Generally, if you go into a hospital with an emergency, there will be a copay, which means an individual cost to the patient.
Even though I have insurance?
Even though you have insurance. But in addition to that, depending on how your particular insurance plan is structured, there's also a deductible.
Those are what we'd call excess payments.
Okay. Those have gone up significantly over the last few years in particular.
And you think there is a direct link between the introduction of Obama's healthcare policy and that happening?
Absolutely.
So who have lost out from increasing premiums?
I would say it's the middle class that's definitely feeling the impact.
My name's Brian Skibo, and back in 2012 I was diagnosed with brain cancer.
But not all the middle class. Meet Brian, 36 years old. His voice slightly slurred by the tumor in his head. He lost his job after being diagnosed, lost his work, healthcare insurance too. Without Obamacare, he could not have got cover for his pre-existing condition.
Like, I don't have to stress out about the bills that would pile up without the Affordable Care Act. I know year to year that I would be covered, but when Donald Trump was elected, that moment I basically feared for my life. Like, literally, I broke down. And I had to call my oncologist to see what would happen. And they're really not sure what would. Sorry.
People like Brian still don't know whether their health care will be safe under President Trump. In interviews, he said he liked aspects of Obamacare. The very policy, he said he'd repeal in full. The view from Washington, D.C. is that even if he still wanted to dismantle it, he couldn't. Julie Rovner is a health policy analyst.
In order to actually repeal the law, they would need what's called a supermajority in the Senate, 60 of the 100 votes. And the Republicans don't have 60 votes in the Senate. They have more like 52 votes. What they can do is use a budget procedure that allows them to pass a bill with only a majority, 51 votes, which they do have. But it wouldn't allow them to repeal the entire law, just the pieces of it that directly affect the budget.
Great. I'll go get your drink and put your order in. Thank you.
Back in Bob's diner, Dawn, like the millions of others who voted for Donald Trump, expect him to honor his promises. But what he said on the campaign trail in at least one area, healthcare, is now no longer his stated policy. He can't, and he says he won't, scrap Obamacare outright. Some see that as a sign of compromise, but there are plenty of other issues we don't yet know about. Environmental policy, business regulation, the wall. And the president-elect knows that America shifted to the right on Tuesday night.
The BBC's Matthew Price reporting. Support for WAMC comes from the Williams College Department of Theater, presenting the Carol Churchill play, The Skryker, through November 19th in the 62 Center for Theater and Dance, 62center.williams.edu. Mategum McClelland, designers, makers, buyers of fine jewelry since 1895, purchasing unwanted diamonds, precious gemstones, and heirloom jewelry, studio and showroom in Great Barrington, mc2jewels.com. Putnam County Tourism, historic sites, farm-to-table dining, kayaking, hiking, biking, and more, Putnam County, where the country begins. Online, tourputnam.org for event calendar. Adelphi University's Hudson Valley Center, offering a Master of Social Work degree. Open house, Tuesday, November 29th, 6 p.m. in Poughkeepsie. Adelphi.edu for more information. Mary Irish with Wall Street.
At about 12:30, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 15 points to 18,833. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index is down 6 points to 2,158, and the NASDAQ Composite is down 28 points to 5,208. The breadth of the market is negative, with 18 declining stocks for every 14 advancing issues. The 30-year Treasury bond is currently yielding 3%. Some of the most active stocks on the big board today include McDonald's, up $3.39 to $117.61. Amazon is down $18.05 to $720.96, and 3M is down $2.91 to $172.19. In the overseas markets last night, Tokyo's Nikkei Index closed 2% higher. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng Index fell 1%. From Morgan Stanley Wealth Management in Niskayuna, in New York, this is Mary Irish bringing you the Wall Street Update for WAMC.
Support for StartAid comes from the Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York. Doctors Susan Boja and Kara Bedour providing audiological and hearing healthcare services in a patient-focused environment. HearingBest.com. The C.H. Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station, a downtown Albany brew pub, offering handcrafted beer, lunch, and dinner menu, accepting orders for Thanksgiving dinners to go now through this Friday. EvansAle.com.
Stardate November 14. The moon takes dead aim at the face of the bull tonight. It's to the upper right of Taurus's V-shaped head as night falls, and nose-to-nose with the bull at first light tomorrow. Binoculars will help you pick out the stars that outline the bull's face through the lunar glare. You shouldn't need any help to pick out the bull's eye, though. Aldebaran is one of the most prominent members of the autumn sky. In fact, it's one of the brightest stars in the entire night sky. If you keep your eye on the moon and Taurus tonight, you'll get a good idea of how the moon moves across the night sky. Its orbital path carries it through a full circle against the starry background every 27 and a third days. At that rate, it moves a distance equal to its own diameter in less than an hour. So, from one night to the next, it moves almost half again the width of your fist held at arm's length. That's not especially fast, but with a bright marker like Aldebaran close by, it's enough to notice over a period of a few hours. The moon's motion against the background of stars isn't aligned with its phases, though.
Since Earth and Moon are moving around the Sun, it takes a couple of days longer to complete the cycle of phases. So the Moon sometimes passes Aldebaran when it's about full, as it is tonight. But at other times, it's a crescent or at some other phase. Different views for its regular meetings with the Bull. Tomorrow, the Moon and a meteor shower. And we have more sky watching tips and much more about the cosmos in Stardate magazine. Subscription information at stardate.org. For the University of Texas at Austin McDonald Observatory, I'm Sandy Wood.
Support for Stardate comes from Hudson Opera House, presenting the 20th annual Winter Walk on Warren Street, featuring live music, performers, horse-drawn wagon rides, fireworks show, Saturday, December the 3rd from 5 to 8 p.m., hudsonoperahouse.org. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, celebrating 35 years serving the public, nysba.org/lawyer-referral. 10,000 villages located in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, Main Street, Northampton, and Lee Premium Outlets, offering fairly traded holiday gifts and jewelry from around the world, 10,000villages.com. 1 o'clock, it's Radiolab. Today at 2 on Vox Pop, Medical Monday, Dr. John Horan. The focus today on blood and marrow disorders, anemia, and pediatric oncology. 2 o'clock today. The cinema recently lost an important Polish director. Our film commentator Rob Edelman with an appreciation.
Andrzej Wajda is the best known and most revered Polish filmmaker of his generation. His films are daring, provocative, and personal. And many are decidedly political in that they focus on individuals who valiantly resist repression or ponder the realities of war and heroism. Wajda's most recent film, titled Afterimage, is a biopic about Władysław Strzemiński, an avant-garde artist who was active in the early 20th century. Strzemiński is depicted as a champion of individual freedom who clashes with and is victimized by Stalinist conventions. Afterimage, which had its world premiere in September at the Toronto International Film Festival, also is Wajda's final film. He passed away last month at the age of 90. Now, for sure, Afterimage is, appropriately, a solemn tale of injustice and the stifling of artistic integrity. But one also might label it a heartfelt missive from one nonconformist artist to another nonconformist artist. And with this in mind, Wajda's career is well worth exploring, starting with his first three features, which date from the 1950s. They are A Generation, Ashes and Diamonds, and Canal, films which examine his country's resistance against the Nazis during World War II, as well as Poland's post-war reconstruction. They question the glorified, idealized heroics of people in battle, as well as chart the paths that individuals choose when they are trapped by events they cannot control. Another Wajda film that deals with similar themes was made a half century later. It is titled Katyn, and it was released in 2007. Katyn is an intense, fact-based account of Poland during and immediately after the war, when the country was swallowed up by Germany and Russia. The story opens in September 1939, when the Nazis and Soviets have just invaded Poland, and the Polish citizenry are pressed between the Germans and Russians. Then, the following year, 14,000 Polish officers and civilians are massacred by the Russians in the Katyn Forest. While they occupy the country, the Germans use this bloodbath to propagandize the Poles. Once the war ends, however, the Soviets, who are building their post-war power base, attribute the atrocity to the Nazis, and heaven help anyone who disagrees. Now, even though the characters in Katyn are fictional, it is impossible to forget that their stories are based on a real-life atrocity. And two facts cannot be ignored, facts which inform not just this film, but all the works of Andrzej Wajda. Now, first, when he was a teenager, Wajda served in the resistance while the Nazis occupied his homeland. And also, his father, Jacob Wajda, a captain in the Polish infantry, was one of the 14,000 who was butchered in the Katyn Forest. Let me also cite one final Wajda film and note that After Image is not his lone biopic. In 1990, he made Korczak, the story of a gentle, remarkable man, Janusz Korczak, an esteemed doctor, writer, and children's rights advocate who operates a home for Jewish orphans in Warsaw during the 1930s. His concerns are people and not politics. "I love children," he states matter-of-factly. "I fight for years for the dignity of children." In his school, he offers his charges a humanist education. But then the Nazis invade his homeland. Given his station in life, Korczak easily could escape to freedom, but he chooses to remain with his children and do whatever he must to keep his orphanage running and his charges alive, even after they all are imprisoned in the Warsaw Ghetto. Now, all of Andrzej Wajda's films, from A Generation, Ashes and Diamonds, and Canal, all the way through Korczak, Katyn, and After Image, are monuments as much to the memory of generations past as to the survival of generations to come. And they are testaments to the life, career, and passion of their creator.
Rob Edelman has authored or edited several dozen books on film, television, and baseball. He has taught film history at several universities, and his writing has appeared in numerous newspapers, magazines, and journals. His frequent collaborator is his wife, fellow WAMC film commentator Audrey Kupferberg. Rob Edelman can be heard Mondays on Midday Magazine. Your comments are welcome anytime. It's 800-695-9170 for the WAMC listener comment line, 800-695-9170. Wall Street, the Dow down 8 points, 18,839. The S&P down 5, 2,159. The NASDAQ down 30, 5,206. The weather forecast for the rest of today, mostly sunny skies, mid to upper 50s for the daytime high. Clear early tonight, then clouding up late, low in the mid-30s. Cloudy tomorrow, there are showers likely, near 50. Wednesday and Thursday, partly to mostly sunny, low to mid-50s. Support for WAMC comes from Southwestern Vermont Medical Center, Bennington. Through their affiliation with Dartmouth Hitchcock, offering clinical trials, advanced technology, and genetic counseling for cancer treatment in Vermont, the Berkshires and Capital Region, svhealthcare.com. The Turning Stone Resort, offering accommodations, dining, spa treatments, golf courses, and a variety of live entertainment, turningstone.com. Ruggie's Subaru, Ruggie's Chevrolet, Route 44, Millbrook. Continuing over 80 years of tradition and service in the Hudson Valley, Chevrolet design, new and pre-owned parts and service, RuggiesChevrolet.com. Thank you for joining us today on WAMC's Midday Magazine. Our engineer, Rob Chacon. I'm Brian Shields. Radio Lab is next.